Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about something that's epic, and it's not Infinity Blade. So we'll be talking about the Epic Game Store.
We will talk about Infinity Blade.
Yeah, we have to talk about Infinity Blade. I'm games editor Rishi, and with me is the friend of the podcast, Mike, and our host, Pranay.
Yeah. Yes. Those are the
Infinity
two
Infinity Gauntlet, is that what it's called?
Leave, never to return.
Isn't that what you do after using the Infinity Gauntlet, or is that even the correct
term? I don't know, man. We'll only know when it shows up as a Fortnite LTM, so yeah.
Yeah, so Infinity Stones are gone. Half the life on the entire universe is gone.
Don't say half the life.
Yeah, it's like too soon, man. It's too
People
soon.
Will cry.
Too soon.
Yeah, now Infinity Blade is also gone. So, yeah. Anyway, so the backstory is that Epic is this company that made the series of games, a trilogy called Infinity Blade for iOS, particularly iPad and iPhone.
Chair Entertainment.
Yeah, and it
was...
Yeah,
subsidiary Chair Entertainment, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, so when these games launched on the iPhone, they were often like in Apple's keynote for the iPhone, showing out how graphically intensive they are and like look at the visual fidelity, etc. They were really great games. We really enjoyed playing them. Now, Epic has made the amazing decision of removing them from the App Store so that no one else can buy. But this sort of follows a broader trend in which Epic has been discontinuing or shutting down everything that's not called Fortnite, because they also make that Fortnite Battle Royale game, right?
Yeah, so essentially what's gone down is yesterday, at the time of recording this podcast, yesterday, Infinity Blade 1, 2, and 3 were removed from the App Store. However, the third game has something called Clan Wars. So that series of content is still going to come through. And at the same time, Epic's made Infinity Blade stickers on iMessage free. But their logic for removing Infinity Blade is quite amusing. And I'll just read the quote, the important parts of their statement, which is, "At Epic, we strive to put players first and provide a supported, full-fledged experience in every game we publish. With the development of Spyjinx and other projects, it has become increasingly difficult for our team to support the Infinity Blade series at a level that meets our standards." Now, that's fascinating for a ton of reasons, because right now, unless you've been living under a rock, you'd know that Fortnite's the most popular game on Earth. That's one thing. And because it's the most popular game on Earth and has that much appeal the world over, I mean, obviously, some parts of the world like it more than others, but that's a debate for another podcast. It's obviously generated the most revenue this year, and to the point where it has allowed Epic to, you know, arm twist Sony into allowing crossplay across PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Before Fortnite crossplay on PS4 was just between iOS, it was just between mobile and PC. And at the same time, it's also allowed them to launch the Epic Store, which has an 88% revenue and share of developers at 12% to Epic, which is to give you some perspective, Steam does 70-30 in favor.
I mean, that's
of,
the industry standard,
that's the industry
basically.
Standard. Yeah, and
even
fact,
Apple and Google have the same things on their own stores. And considering how Android is like a PC in the quote-unquote open sense, Epic has not launched Fortnite on Google Play. We've discussed this at
yes.
length before. They've launched it on the Epic Store because that's a thing on Android. Fortnite, like to give you some more perspective, Fortnite is so big that even though it's not on Google Play, if you search for Fortnite, Google has a warning on top which says Fortnite is not available on Google Play, just so that people don't download like scam apps, because there are loads of those on Android. But,
yes.
You know, back to the whole Infinity Blade thing, it's very interesting that they pull the stuff now, because it's not like Apple's had any like major OS release right now. Infinity Blade, the three games work fine on iOS 12 from last what we tested. And they work fine on the new iOS devices as well. Usually, developers do this when there's a new OS update or when there's new devices with new screen sizes, where, you know, like, people will actually have a problem running the game. The fact that they've done it now pretty much speaks volumes for how little they care about the games. Because, it's funny that they actually did this a few hours before their patch went live.
Yeah, because...
Don't bang your leg on that table.
They basically did this a few hours before their patch went live for Fortnite, which literally added the mythical Infinity Blade to the game as a melee weapon. And they said stay tuned for more Infinity Blade stuff before this happened. Now, I pretty much think that they are going to use this when they launch their Epic Game Store on Android, because as far as I'm aware, these are iOS exclusives on mobile.
Yeah, I think outside of China, I think China has a Kinect version of Infinity Blade.
Okay, so on mobile, they are only on
yes.
iOS for now. And because you actually have they are planning to launch the Epic Game Store as a full-fledged thing on Android with the same very good, like, developer-friendly revenue split. I'm pretty sure, like, they can easily port it there because they are Unreal Engine games after all, and, like, it's easy to port stuff from Unreal Engine to Android. So I have a feeling that's what they will end up doing, because there's no way you remove stuff from sale. Like, thankfully, it's still in purchases for people. Can't say how long that'll last because, like, they seem to be doing very weird things. But yeah, they could use this as one of their launch exclusives or whatever for the Epic Store on Android to get more people to sign up for it, aside from the people who already signed up for it on for Fortnite, basically.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that prior to the announcement of Infinity Blade's removal, and actually on the topic of the Epic Game Store, Tim Sweeney was interviewed by Game Informer. And he actually had this, and Game Informer asked him, right, that, you know, at the end of the day, considering Tim Sweeney's stance in the past has been to bash Microsoft for its unfriendly developer policies with UWP and with the Windows Store, what's the approach we'd see with the Epic Game Store? And would it come to Android? So yeah, he said that there are plans to bring it to Android. And what he actually said was, and in addition to that, he also said that, and I quote, we'd like to launch on iOS in 2019. However, that is in apparent conflict with current Apple policy. We believe all general purpose computing devices such as PC, smartphone, and tablets should be open to competition between stores. And then he goes on to say that, you know, we don't expect the same thing for consoles because console manufacturers subsidize hardware costs and promote our game really well and all. So they can be given a pass to take their, you know, 18% extra. But others, we will obviously tighten the screws. That's their approach.
It's pretty, like, I wouldn't want to say delusional or cute because it's Tim Sweeney and he usually knows what he's saying. But, like, I don't know in which universe Apple is going to bend over for anyone for allowing another store. They've not allowed Amazon with the Kindle store. Many developers have just, like, you know, given up on earning more, and they actually putting their stuff through in-app purchases so that consumers don't get punished. I mean, as far as I'm aware, with Fortnite, V-Bucks are a little more expensive on iOS compared to other platforms. Is that correct?
I think it's the same price across.
Okay, but a lot of developers, or even like service subscriptions that you get, sometimes they're more expensive on iOS because Apple forces you to, like, sell stuff through in-app purchases if you have a subscription. There are a few exceptions to this rule, but yeah, so the people offering the subscription earn less because they have to give 30% to Apple. But Apple's changed some of these policies where you start earning for subscriptions more after the first year or something like that. But basically, Apple has not allowed anyone to sideload anything or to, like, have a separate store. In fact, if you want to buy stuff on the Kindle, you can't use the Kindle app. The Kindle app just lets you add stuff to wishlist or download samples. You need to go to the Kindle store through Safari and buy stuff. Somehow, the Xbox store has slipped through the cracks because you can actually buy stuff on the Xbox, like, you know, the Xbox app to queue up on your actual console. You cannot do that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Steam Link wasn't allowed. They said that people get confused or something and they'll think they're buying stuff on iOS, but they're actually buying it over there. But thankfully, somehow Microsoft and even Sony, although both of them basically are web views within the app, but they do allow you to spend, like, money and queue up stuff on your console or download stuff to your console. So there's, like, I cannot imagine a timeline in which Apple allows this, because, like, regardless of how big Fortnite is on the App Store and Epic is making a ton of money through it. There's no way they pull it from there and do it, because that would be, like, one of the dumbest decisions ever.
Yeah, I mean, I would really like to see them, like, follow through on this, right? So since the App Store is not allowing them to make enough money, just pull the game from the App Store and, like, do the same thing what you did to Infinity Blade with Fortnite as well, right?
But that's the thing, that wouldn't happen, because, I mean, if we chart when Fortnite got successful and when Fortnite actually came to public consciousness, sure, there are two points to look at. One was when Ninja streamed with Drake.
Yeah.
Because apparently that's a big deal. But more important than that, and much before that, was the fact that the game was coming to iOS with crossplay. That was the bigger deal.
And it was free and it was the full game.
Yeah, and that was the bigger draw. That was the bigger draw for a lot of people, wherein you had this console quality experience, a Battle Royale console quality experience, available on your smartphone. And that kind of jump-started the whole Battle Royale wars we're seeing right now between PUBG Mobile and Fortnite.
And remember, PUBG did the quote-unquote soft launch, which lasted like 2 days before they actually went to the public, because exactly, they knew they'd lose out on like the Battle Royale market, which was like just like starting out at the time. So, yeah, that was a very big deal. I mean, like, no one will forget 2018, early 2018, when, you know, like, everyone was begging for invites for Fortnite. There was, like, a whole thing about, please give me an invite and stuff like that for it, where everyone was scrambling for one. On Android, that was, like, when I thought, when they introduced invites on Android, it didn't really hit the peak that it did on iOS, because at that time, it was Fortnite Mobile is iOS only, and that was a very big deal. That led to everything, like, you know, in the football stadiums and all, when they won stuff and sports teams won, they used to do the Fortnite dances and all that shit. That basically was like that I'd say that point in last year was when Fortnite actually started exploding.
Yeah, and a lot of it also has given Epic Games the leeway, the bandwidth to do stuff like the Epic Game Store. I mean, when they launched the Epic Game Store, they even said it straight up, right? That because of the money Fortnite's making, we're able to essentially do stuff like the Fortnite, like the Epic Game Store.
And they even did that. They retroactively increased the revenue share for the Unreal Asset Store, as far as I'm aware. And they retroactively applied it. So, like, a lot of people, like devs, were actually posting about how they could pay off their loans immediately because they retroactively just ended up getting a lot more money thanks to Epic. So they've been doing a lot of quote-unquote developer-friendly stuff since then.
Yeah.
But as of basically the Game Awards is when there was a boatload of news from Epic.
Yes.
Not just for Season 7, which the creative mode kind of leaked. Like, we linked to that in the show notes. The creative mode leaked, but... Epic basically announced and released the Epic Store with exclusives and with free games if you sign up for it for the first 2 weeks. They also plan on giving customers free games every few weeks.
Yeah, so like essentially two games a month is what they're going to do. And what they've essentially... And the first two, I think, is Subnautica and Super Meat Boy.
Yes.
And what they've essentially done is they've... So what they're doing is similar to what EA used to do, or EA still does, which is give customers free games.
Origin on the House or something.
Yeah, Origin on the House with their program. So,
oh, yeah, I think I got Mass Effect 2 for free.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the point is they're doing the same thing where it's like two games a month. And in terms of exclusives, there are some interesting announcements. I mean, the office favorite Supergiant Games actually has its roguelike title Hades as a Epic Games Store. I think it's a timed exclusive.
So it's exclusive. It's kind of like what Microsoft does with a lot of indie games, where during game preview, it's exclusive to Xbox. So with this, while it's in early access, yes, Supergiant actually launched an early access game for feedback and stuff from the community. During that period, it's exclusive to the Epic Store. After that, it's coming to more platforms, not just like, you know, Steam, which is what like the few people who have been yelling about want. It's going to come to console also, and it looks really, really good. And like, they already posted a few like samples from the soundtrack. It's their quality, basically. So that's a big deal, because Supergiant Games has had a ton of success on Steam with Bastion and Transistor. Pyre, not so much, I think, on both PS4 and PC, but Transistor has done a ton.
Yeah.
Bastion has done a ton. Like, Bastion's one of the early indie success stories.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons people even bothered with the Xbox 360 arcade, because of Bastion, games like Bastion. And that's the thing. So like, they've managed to get Supergiant Games on board. Apparently, Super Meat Boy Forever.
Yeah, so Super Meat Boy Forever, which is a Infinite Runner type version of Super Meat Boy, which is coming to every platform, including mobile. That is launching, I believe, in Feb or in April, and is coming to all consoles at the same time. And for PC, it's the Epic Game Store. And it's supposedly 1 year exclusive, timed exclusive to the Epic Game Store before it launches on other platforms. But other than that, Annapurna Interactive, who've published a lot of interesting indie releases like Florence on mobile, Donut County on consoles, PC and mobile, their version of Ashen, which is the co-op Dark Souls abstract art style version of it, which is also on Xbox. It was supposed to launch on Steam and Xbox and Windows 10 Store as a Play Anywhere title, and it's actually just become an Xbox Game Pass title. And not Play Anywhere, which they are apparently working to fix, because they've kind of been advertising that before. And it's on the Epic Game Store. The bigger announcement of the night was they're bringing Sony's, the previously, I'd say, PlayStation exclusive Journey from that game company, which launched on PS3 before coming to PS4. That's going to come to PC again through the Epic Game Store. Them getting Annapurna Interactive basically on their side is very interesting to me, because... Annapurna publishes a lot of interesting titles, and like Journey is a really big deal because it's been PlayStation only. In fact, it's a Sony copyright, Sony owned title. So they're actually bringing a PlayStation exclusive to PC through the Epic Store.
So you know what? I have one question about this. Annapurna also released a couple of games on iOS, such as Florence and Gorogoa, right?
Yeah, Gorogoa also. And they also brought Sony's, again, PlayStation exclusive Flower to iOS, which is only on
so
iOS.
So you think Gorogoa and whatever that Florence will be now PC exclusive via Epic Games Store at
some
point? So
Florence, I don't think it'll actually work without a touchscreen, given how it's been designed, but Gorogoa can easily come there. But the thing is, at that time, the Epic Game Store wasn't live, and Annapurna is not, I don't think they're in the business of pulling games from Steam to launch on the Epic Store. But that did happen with another game from Coffee Stain Studios called, what is it? Something City.
Satisfactory.
Satisfactory. I don't know why I keep saying City. But yeah, Satisfactory was a game from Coffee Stain Studios who published Goat Simulator and the various Goat Simulator games. It was actually scheduled to launch on Steam, and unlike the other games where the Steam date is just changed to TBA or basically unknown right now, the Steam page was actually deleted for that game, implying that it's kind of they don't want to launch it on Steam at all, and it's just going to be on the Epic Game Store. So I think that's a bigger deal than timed exclusives, that like some developers are actually so done with Steam and like the fact that, at least according to them, Steam isn't doing anything to justify the 30%, that they just want to launch straight up on the Epic Game Store.
Yeah, so Epic Game Store has an 88-12 share, right? Like 88%
yes, and also if
devs.
if you make a game using Unreal Engine, you get a higher cut, higher than that also, or you don't have to pay the license, which is what you have to pay on other platforms if you use the Epic Game Store.
Yeah, but
and there was one more thing, which is the Super Meat Boy, at least so the Super Meat Boy official account, which is run by Team Meat, which is Edmund McMillan and Tommy, I forget his last name. When they announced that it was exclusive to the Epic Store, the Super Meat Boy Forever, a lot of flack, a lot of people were angry, and they said, and I quote, "Everybody hated Steam when it first came out too. I remember because I was one of them." So yeah, they've actually said that, and they want people to try stuff. And a lot of people have been saying, you know, no one cares about your game now. Don't come back crying to Steam when no one buys it on the Epic Store and all. And Team Meat is basically just quoting and making fun of these people, which I don't blame them for. But yeah, basically, a lot of people are unhappy about this because apparently for an open platform like PC, some people want everything on Steam and aren't willing to try other stuff, which is quite funny. So
yeah, I mean, that's the whole situation which we've seen. And I mean, here at Garage 360, we've pretty much, I mean, spent the majority of this podcast laughing. I mean, in general, since I think this is episode 101, I think since the beginning, Pranay and I have been having a good laugh at the, oh my God, must have everything on Steam crowd.
Yeah, it's
and it's
a
basically
new
business as usual.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the way I see it is, it's plain and simple, right? On one end, you have a platform that enables developers to do more because more revenue, which means they can put more back into their games if they so choose. And at the same time, if you look at where Steam's gone in the past few years, it's pretty hilarious. There's been zero curation. Unless you're a big AAA game, discoverability is a pain. And for most developers, even the way Steam handles curation and censorship is mind-bogglingly stupid. So, I mean, it didn't take it. And don't get me wrong, it's not like we've had other stores not trying. We've had the Windows Store do its half-hearted attempt this generation, similar to how they did last generation with Games for Windows Live. We've had GOG trying to do what they can, but the problem with GOG is, despite having a better UI, they don't have the features you want, like a big picture mode or native controller support. Or, I mean, fine, they got cloud saves, but the rest of it is pretty much bare bones. It's like Steam 1.0. Battle.net's decent, but Battle.net is what you're going to end up using just for Activision Blizzard stuff.
The problem with Battle.net, more than, like, we'll get to this actually, yeah, every store, like, we've been talking about how it helps developers, but there are certain features which stores need to implement to make it better for consumers, like big picture support, and Battle.net still has region locked friend list. I mean,
yeah, I mean, region locked friend list, region locked progress. I mean, this is 2018.
Activision,
man,
actually has the games are also region locked. Call of Duty now on Steam, they weren't region locked, because
exactly
now you have games which are more expensive but they're still region locked, so it kind of goes against why you raise the price in the first place.
Yeah,
so
it actually, and speaking of region locking and pricing, what's disturbing to me, at least with the Epic Game Store, and this is one thing which is big in Steam's favor, is that the Epic Game Store does not have regional pricing. Everything is in dollar pricing, and that is a big deterrent for a lot of Indian gamers. At least, I mean, it's the same issue with GOG. Origin has Indian pricing, but Origin's Indian pricing is a dollar pricing anyway. And It's going to be interesting because the way I see it, we're probably going to head towards a future where you're going to need at least 2 to 3 clients. You're going to need Steam. You're going to need Battle.net. You're going to probably need Uplay or Origin if that's how you feel.
I mean, if you play Ubisoft games, even if you don't use Uplay, you need it to launch the games through Steam. So yeah. You need Uplay. But the thing about regional pricing is even Valve is going back on that because Artifact doesn't have regional pricing and Valve recommends regional pricing for every developer. But they don't seem to care about it. Now, I get that, you know, it's a card game where you can buy and sell cards and stuff. But yeah, this is Valve's first game in a while and there's no regional pricing. When Thronebreaker, The Witcher Tales launched on Steam, it actually had India pricing for about a few hours or a day before going back to full price.
I mean, even South Park, The Fractured Butthole, it had Indian pricing on Steam for like a couple of months before release.
Yeah, Ubisoft has stopped. In fact, a lot of bigger publishers are now going against regional pricing because I guess in their mind, they'd rather have a few sales at full price versus less sales at more sales at a lower price.
Just a bit of a correction there. It's not you guess. It's actually true. This is something we've confirmed with publishers. They're more happy with Indians paying more money and have few of them buying games because they still make more revenue at the end of the day.
So a lot of, I think like the only publisher which consistently has good Indian pricing from the sort of biggish publishers is Koei Tecmo.
And THQ.
Yeah, both of them do India pricing very well. They follow Valve's recommended India pricing. Bandai Namco, I think they like throw darts on a board and decide which games they're going to do India pricing with because...
Tekken 7.
Tekken 7 had India pricing, but then Ni No Kuni 2 didn't. Dark Souls Remastered, I believe it had regional pricing, but then Dark Souls 3 didn't have regional pricing. Tales of Vesperia does not have regional pricing. In a lot of cases, Bandai Namco's games on PC are more expensive than they are on console. But there's still a chance that they do regional pricing. But the bigger problem with Bandai Namco games is region lock, like Dragon Ball FighterZ, and we've spoken at length about what's happened with that game in India. Capcom, on the other hand, used to have regional pricing. Now their games are the most expensive in the world in India. I'm not exaggerating. Games like the Capcom Beat'em-up collection, stuff like that, is more expensive than it is on some consoles. And it's the most expensive region in the world for those games, India on Steam. So there are a few publishers that are still doing this, but then a lot of them don't care. Sega did regional pricing with Yakuza 0, but they didn't do regional pricing with Valkyria Chronicles 4, which was 1,000 rupees more than it is on PS4 and Xbox in India on Steam. So that gives you an idea of how some publishers are sort of just moving away from that. And yeah, like as Rishi said, like they want to earn more from fewer people. Because that's what gets them more revenue in the end. So regional pricing, yes, that's a big thing working in Steam's favor. But for how long at this rate?
Exactly. It begs the question, right? How long is regional pricing going to be a differentiator? How long will people care before they move on to other platforms or just buy games during sales? And I think that's the behavior they're also seeing, right? That at the end of the day, you'll have a small amount of people who'll buy on day one. The rest will buy during sales. And I mean, all of it then begs the question, right? Where is the PC ecosystem, if you want to call it that, going? Valve's tried to do a few things in the past. They've tried to get stuff in like Steam Machine, Steam OS, and most of them have just been like cool ideas that they've let go halfway.
Yeah, they do that for a lot of stuff, like even a Steam Link on mobile. They update the beta client on Android, but on iOS, even though Apple and them have apparently been doing some stuff and they've said that they'll work on it to make sure it like works with Apple's rules, nothing's happened on that front. They've not spoken about anything. Steam Link was such a failure that they actually had to sell it for, what, $0.25 or something?
$2.5.
$2.5, yeah. Down from, like, probably 10 times that amount, if not more.
It was, like, I think $50.
Yeah, so 1/20th the amount. Steam controller basically seems like a lost cause because in the last year, they've added native support for every console controller. And most people use that anyway, so they just continue using their preferred console controller on PC. Like, it has native DualShock 4 support, native Switch Pro control support. You can even use Joy-Cons on PC, which is, like, the most comfortable controller if you, like, split or whatever, if you don't care about a D-pad. So, Steam controller is basically, like, I think it's dead in the water because, like, no one cares about it. Or they're leaving it to the community as they do with most of their things which they should actually hire people for.
Oh, like Half-Life 3?
Yeah, so, basically.
So, that's the thing. I mean, the way I see it for PC gamers, while we're seeing a situation that the hardware prices are normalizing about time, at least for GPUs and memory, I mean, to an extent, it's reached a point where the software side of things appears to be in flux. I mean, you have a ton of stores to choose from. In a way, I think it's good. Competition's always good because if anything, it'll make other stores and other publishers take note. So I mean, if you think about it, look what's happened since the Epic Game Store's launch. We've had Valve turn Counter-Strike into free-to-play. We've had...
And launched Battle Royale.
Yeah, with
Remember
Battle Royale.
Remember when Valve used to like lead the pack?
Yeah, and then we've had... And then I think in a day or two prior to the announcement of the Epic Games Store, Valve rejigged its revenue share. But then they rejigged it in such a fashion that it only helped the rich developers get richer. So it didn't exactly help indies one bit. And now we're in a situation where it's game on with both of them trying to outdo each other. And I think this is something that's going to play out for most of 2019. We're going to see a situation where one store is going to try topping up, trying to do better than the other. And at the end of the day, I just think it's great for customers because it just means cheaper games. But that being said, there are some games I don't expect to get cheaper, like anything from Bethesda.
Yeah, Bethesda, basically what happened is with Fallout 76, a lot of people thought, you know, it's going to launch on Steam because Fallout has such a big audience on Steam. Like it does. Fallout 4 did super well across all platforms. And... Fallout 76 didn't launch on Steam. Fallout 76 Bethesda.net. Now, a lot of people thought, you know, it's a multiplayer-focused game. They'd launch it first on Bethesda.net and then bring it to Steam, which is what they've done with other games. But it seems like Bethesda's moving away from Steam even for the single-player-focused stuff like Rage 2. Rage 2 was supposed to launch on Steam. GMG's changed the DRM mentioned on the page from Steamworks to Bethesda.net.
Yeah, so and for those of you who are unaware, when Mike says GMG is referring to Green Man Gaming,
they're a retailer that has actually started doing regional pricing again for India after like basically not caring about India for a while. But Bethesda games on Bethesda.net are a lot more expensive, and it actually makes sense to buy those games at retail in India if they show up on PC. Like Fallout 76 was $3,499 or $3,999 on PC, which is less than how much it costs on Bethesda.net. So
yep, and I mean, it also goes to show that the modding community will pretty much be splintered, because a large part of the appeal of picking up Skyrim or picking up Fallout New Vegas or even picking up Fallout 3 was the mod support. And a lot of it worked through Nexus Mods, which has open tools and allowed you and worked really well with Steam. That obviously is not going to be the case anymore. However, some of Bethesda's back catalog is also on GOG, and those versions of the game are mod friendly too. But the fact that they seem to be going all in on with the Bethesda.net launcher is a little disturbing, considering that the first game that was a big exclusive to it was Fallout 76, and that was a dumpster fire. And what's worse is that forget the game being a technical mess and being a dumpster fire. Even to get a refund on the Bethesda store is next to impossible. They ask for way too many details.
Yeah, like the date you created your account and shit like that.
Apparently, date you created your account, they want to know your address, they want like way too many details before they can, you know, give you a refund.
Yeah, so, I mean, they should just like start taking Aadhaar while they, you know, let you create the account, and immediately they'll get all the details, right?
Yeah, country road, take me home, indeed. But, I mean, that's the situation with them. I mean, EA is going to continue doing this stuff with Origin. And they, on occasion, you'd see them try to get other publishers on board. Ubisoft's had a few of its games on Origin in the past, which I found really amusing, because you'll still need Uplay to play them. And speaking of Ubisoft, they've had their own thing with Uplay, but all them, I mean, it just reaches a point where, yeah, you'll need at least 3 to 4 of them. In a way, it's really funny, because if you think about it, in a way, the situation where the entire PC game store market is right now, it kind of reminds me of how PC games used to be in a pre-Valve era, where you'd end up buying this big box PC game, install it, or usually have its own client, own launcher, like Bioshock, the original Bioshock. When it came out on disc, it had something called the Triton launcher, which is what 2K was trying to do as their Steam competitor, and then they realized, yeah, we can't do this. And so that's why when you bought Bioshock on disc, on PC, you actually got this weird thing called the Triton launcher, and there was a patch for it that you had to install so that it would work with Steam. And you had other publishers trying to do it. I think Square Enix has their own launcher for some of their own PC games, which is still in use.
Yeah,
for some
Final
reason.
Fantasy 14 uses its own 14, launcher.
Final Fantasy 8, Final Fantasy 7, all three of them have.
Yeah, they have Square Enix only, and Final Fantasy 14 is implemented so weirdly on PC where if you want to buy it on Steam, you have to continue buying everything on Steam, and they actually discount everything Final Fantasy 14 much less on Steam. So you can actually like save, I think, for the price of 2 expansions and the base game is what you'd pay for just 1 expansion on Steam, because you can only buy Steam stuff for Final Fantasy 14 on Steam. It's kind of like how Ubisoft works. The Ubisoft games, the Steam versions of them can only be bought on Steam. You cannot buy a Steam key for any Ubisoft current title outside Steam. So they get more control over the Uplay stuff, and they try to make that competitive so people come there.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, you have those kind of situations, which is in a way good because it essentially means lower price, better product. And but then also, that's one part of it. But the other part of it is something Pranay and I have been witness to, you know, as I call it, professional hazard, is that it also reminds us of a certain little period of time, I think between 2012 and 2017, 2016, called the third party app store.
Yeah, so this is primarily to do with Android and not other platforms. So we came across a bunch of these, such as, what was that, Mobo Genie, and a bunch of others. So like what they used to do was they used to dangle this carrot in front of developers saying that we'll give you some money. Why don't you port your app to our store and we'll give you a nicer revenue split as well. And, you know, you can get a like fantastic user base because this app store comes preloaded on a bunch of phones. And that way you get access to an audience which is, you know, right waiting there for you because these phones are really popular. Now, once they got in there, like what I saw was, you know, most of these popular apps, popular as in like the mostly they would quote smaller developers and get them on the platform. And the bigger ones, I don't think they really got into it that much. Like the likes of Facebook and all, I don't think they ever bothered making their own apps for these random third-party app stores.
No, they didn't, because a lot of them would just come preloaded on the phone anyway.
So yeah, exactly.
WhatsApp, Facebook, and yeah, even at the time WeChat would all be preloaded. Yeah.
So what we saw eventually was that, you know, most of these smaller developers, they got acquired by bigger companies, and the third-party app store experiment didn't go anywhere, frankly, because as time goes by, you'll see this, right? Like some one company will start taking control of the whole ecosystem, the one that runs the show. In this case, it is most probably Google. Even though now you can install certain games like Fortnite from the third-party app store, eventually you are going to have to bow down to the authorities.
Yeah, for most cases, that is true. And more importantly, and that also leads us to believe that one possible outcome of this grand epic game store experiment is it could just be relegated to, you know, third-party app store status on Android. But that's
yeah,
not to
but
say
you know what? Like, I'll just bring up one more store which we missed sort of earlier.
Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. So the Amazon app store for Android, does anyone even remember that? Because you could get so many games. I think even Monument Valley and all were like free on that store when it was paid on Google
used
Play.
Yeah, they do a lot of discounts. Like Dragon Quest VIII, which is one of the most expensive games on iOS and Android at like, I think it's $1,800 or $1,500 or something like that. It was very cheap on the Amazon App Store. But the problem is you need to like load that, update it through that and all. They used to do a lot of tie-ups with Hearthstone where you used to get, you can use Amazon coins. And I know people who've bought Hearthstone 50-pack expansions for the price, like almost 30% or 40% off through this, just using the Amazon App Store and stuff like that. So,
yeah, personally, I never used that store simply because even if you downloaded a free game, you'd get an email saying, oh, a free game has been downloaded. So I could never figure out how to disable those emails. So I think that's why I stopped using the Amazon App Store. But in the larger scheme of things, where is Amazon App Store for Android right now?
Yeah, like, exactly. And a lot of what Amazon's doing now on Android is developer focused. They have stuff like their Game On Tech, which basically allows for multiplayer and leaderboards to be a thing. But that's about it. You don't hear much of what they're doing or what people care about. And I mean, that's not to say the third-party app store approach doesn't have its merits. I mean, it's worked really well in China. But then in China, you don't have Google. So I guess that's also the other part of it, right?
Yeah, so that's one big part of that. But you know what? Like with the Amazon App Store in particular, while we did see a lot of these developers going there because that carrot was dangled in front of them, ultimately, they never really followed through with that because, well, in the large scheme of things, it didn't pick up, right? So with the Epic Game Store as well, the same story could take place where people will go there for some exclusives. But then now with the market having completely changed as opposed to what it was in 2012. In 2012, it was either Steam or, you know, some broken down version of a Microsoft store that you could go to, I think. But now the market has, you know, as we mentioned earlier, the Bethesda's own launcher. Then now EA has its own store in Origin. And all of these, like some of these are like actually pretty mature in the content they offer and the policies that they have. So I really don't know whether, you know, Epic Game Store will be able to keep these developers on its platform in the long term and if that is a sustainable strategy.
Like one of the things which everyone's forgetting about is how many Fortnite players are actually going to bother with other games. A lot of these people, you know, they stick to one thing and they're going to just play Fortnite.
Yeah, and you know what, like I'm really sorry for saying this, but this Fortnite addiction and this PUBG addiction is just like a bit like gambling. And you know, the same thing with FIFA Ultimate Team as well, right? So all these people, they just get addicted to this one game and they spend their entire life in that game. So where do they have the time to play any other games, or where do they have the desire to check anything else out?
I don't think it has to do with gambling. It has more to do with the way the game is designed and how that hooks them in. Because see, unlike Ultimate Team, there is no I mean, you have loot drops in Fortnite, but you don't have loot crates. You don't have...
PUBG
has them.
But the thing is, those don't actually affect gameplay.
They don't.
So.
They don't. With FUT, they exist and they impact gameplay as well. So I think that's one distinction that needs to be brought in, that it's not gambling. It's more to do with an addictive gameplay loop, which is what we've seen in the past. What do you think Farmville was the same situation?
Yeah, so that's what... Now, like these... the worst thing to happen to the world thanks to mobile gaming is that all these... horrible practices have started making their way into these titles that are available on consoles, etc. as well.
I don't know. I would agree with you to a point that yes, big AAA developers have adopted the nasty practices we've seen from mobile games and casual games. I'll give you that 100%. But I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that, you know, we get impacted from it because a lot of people we know in our day-to-day work are doing that instead of doing something else. But that personal bias aside, I think it'll be fun to see how much of an adoption this actually comes through, as Mike said. Because how many of them will adopt, right? I mean, you're in a situation where Fortnite is raking in what it's raking in on that user base. But will that user base play another game?
And how much of that user base is actually on PC? Because
exactly.
Like with PUBG, we know PUBG Mobile is actually the main version of PUBG. Now, if we look at how much they're earning and what like user base it has. With Fortnite, I refuse to believe the iOS install base is less than the PC install base.
Yeah, and then you also have other dark horses in the scene, right? Like Robot Cash.
Yeah, which is going to launch soon, and they've like courted some more developers, and they're going to give a higher developer revenue share than even the Epic Store and
90-10 split.
And like basically, this is going to be interesting because now everything's just a lot of these stores are just popping up because... Valve is now in the limelight because Valve is, at least they tried to do something, but then they just pissed off independent developers with the thing which says, oh, if you make more than this much money, we'll increase your revenue share. And if you make more than that much, we'll make it better. And like, you know, that was probably done just so that, you know, like Red Dead Redemption 2 doesn't ditch Steam. But given Rockstar can likely, like if Rockstar wanted, they could launch Red Dead Redemption 2 on iOS and they'd make money.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how this pans out. And at least with other options like Robot Cash, that actually, and I don't know how that's going to work because it uses this nebulous term every tech site seems to love called blockchain, wherein you can actually sell your games. And that's funny because that's something Green Man Gaming launched with the ability, or at least it is promised to have the ability to let you sell your digital games. And I mean, and that was like, what, almost 10 years back? And I mean, fast forward to now, no one's been able to do that. No one wants to do that. And it'd be funny to see if that even takes flight. Because, I mean, if you've been given the ability to sell off your digital purchases, that kind of like frees up a lot of cash, particularly if you made bad decisions during Steam sales and other
times. You could say it frees up Robot Cash.
There we go. So, yeah, I mean, TLDR, interesting times ahead if you're a PC gamer.
Okay then, so the games we've been playing this week. So this week I discovered a free-to-play game on iOS. I think it's called...
Brother's playing a game.
Who knows?
Yeah.
The 100 episodes we've done before this have led us to this. Thanks.
This is one for you, Rossi.
Yeah, so the game is called Ping Pong King. It's a free-to-play game, but it has just like one in-app purchase to remove the ads, which is, I guess, a fair model to do a free-to-play game. It really simplifies table tennis. All you have to do is essentially tap a left, like on the left side of the screen or the right side of the screen to hit a shot on the left or the right. So now, while playing this game, all you need to remember is don't look at the player, don't look at the table tennis ball. Just look at the table. So on the table, you'll see like a trail behind the ball, like a line. So it has like vector art, yeah, I should mention. So you'll see a tiny little line on the table. So if it's on the left side, hit the left button. Right side, hit the right button. That's it. Don't remember anything else and play the game. It is a lot of fun, pretty addictive. I sort of discovered this because somebody else had shared this App Store story where it was mentioned that it's a fun, addictive game. So yeah, enjoying
that.
Wow,
App Store editorial team actually doing something good for a change.
I'm pretty sure it's not the India team.
Yeah, I believe that.
Because last time I checked, the India team was sharing stories in which 3 out of 5 games were not available in India.
Yeah,
so.
I love to read about Animal Crossing and getting excited for the fact that it might be available in India.
Yeah.
But no,
don't forget Fire Emblem Heroes also shared as like a blockbuster hit of this year.
Or even calling Tekken a PvE game, which is, that's some MMO term. Why would you use
that? What is that? Player versus Empire?
That's not Star Wars. Player versus Enemy. And yeah.
Wait, Tekken is really a PvE game?
That's what they said. Their words, not mine.
Cool then. Okay, what have you guys been playing?
So, sadly, I've been playing a lot of Smash Ultimate. Yeah, that's a thing. Kind of overdid it since getting the game, trying to finish story mode, unlocking. So yeah, like, while the game is really good, like, you should read the review, which we link and all, there it isn't perfect, as a few Nintendo sites would lead you to believe, because the online is a complete mess.
Yeah, wait, but before you go on, I'd like to, like, make a personal complaint about, like, Nintendo first-party titles that release.
Okay.
So, I feel that a lot of these sites get really carried away with the fact that it's a Nintendo first-party title, and that nostalgia that, you know, I used to play Smash back when I was a kid on a previous console.
I mean, I could say that for any, like, franchise which has some sort of a legacy. We saw that with Tekken, also with Tekken 7 being praised as the fighter of the generation when it's actually hot trash.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's not just like with Nintendo, but I'd say that what you're noticing is because that fan base is a little more noisy in recent years because of the success of the Switch. But the Smash Online is a lag fest, tried it multiple times. It's really, really bad.
Well, we never saw it coming, right? I mean, we didn't play Splatoon 2. We didn't see anything.
No, so the thing is, Splatoon 2 had disconnect issues, but it was actually, like, fun to play when it was. Smash is, like, it's a fighting game. You cannot have such terrible netcode implementation
and
for it.
And now you pay for online.
Yeah, so you're basically paying for laggy internet and laggy performance in the game. But that's one of the biggest problems with it. And the other problem is... you start out with a roster of 8 players, like, they're advertising everyone is here. What they should be saying is everyone is locked and you have to unlock them. So, yeah, like, there is a glitch which some people found, which you can, like, you play 2 hours continuously and exploit this glitch to unlock everyone quickly. That's if you're a decent Smash player. Otherwise, you need to play the story mode, which is very good, but it's, like, 20 to 40 hours long. So,
well,
that's
see,
a thing.
I'll actually defend them on this one. If there is a nice story mode
no,
in the game.
It's a good story mode, I know that, but the thing is... a lot of, like, I saw this online, a lot of people are like, you know, they bought Smash, they bought GameCube controller adapters, they call their friends over for a party, and then they see only 8 characters unlocked, which is the same 8, which is there in the N64 Super Smash Brothers game.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, you know, okay, if you're going to do this, offer players who don't want to spend time grinding a single unlock, or even charge for it if you need to. But, like, let people play how they want to. Don't force them to, like, grind, which is what... Like, if people aren't interested in the story mode, it's a grind for them.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But, you know, like, please explain to me why this GameCube controller is an obsession with so many people. Why can't they just buy the Pro controller, which is fantastic in every way?
So, I believe that some people are not happy with their hands and they want to cause pain to their own hands. That's why they probably want to... No, it's because Super Smash Bros. Melee was super popular. It still is. In fact, it was at Evo last year also, as the most popular thing, and a lot of Smash players continue to use that and they are used to that. So because of that, they are offering that as a way to for those players to play over here, because some people believe that's the best controller. So, like, fair play to them, but Nintendo's giving you an option with that. Like, you can play with a ton of controllers. I've seen someone play with a DualShock 4 on Switch because you get these adapters and stuff like that. But it's basically because Super Smash Bros. Melee is so popular in the competitive scene that they are offering it as an option to those players. So one of the collector's editions in one region actually has a GameCube adapter. And I believe it's a GameCube controller also alongside the game. So yeah, I've been playing a lot of Smash, basically nothing else. What
okay,
about you,
Rishi? I think, you know, you're going to say something similar.
What? Big Boom Bash? What is that game?
No. So I've been playing a bunch of things.
Boom, boom, boom. What is it?
But one of them is Smash, as like Mike said, and I kind of like share the sentiment. There's just too much lock behind, which I find very amusing. I mean, if you had them locked behind for World of Light, that's one thing. But having them locked behind from all modes, including Versus, is a bit extreme. That being said, I mean, the UI is a mess, for the lack of a better term. And yeah, the online play is what it is. Smash aside, I've been playing a ton of Warframe on Switch and PS4. The Fortuna updated, which basically adds a new open world to it.
Ninjas play free, but slacker ninjas pay for free games.
Yeah, bandwidth is expensive. No, but the point is, so for those of you who are unaware, Warframe's a free-to-play game that was made by the co-creators of Unreal Tournament, Digital Extremes. And it launched in 2013 with the PS4.
Yes, and jokes aside, I will step out here, go out on a limb and say that if you actually want to play this game, you should definitely go online, maybe on Reddit or something. The Warframe community is amazing. Really supportive people who will actually make you feel welcome and like help you out in the game. It's not like that other game, EVE Online, where like...
Yeah,
you know,
find
it's really...
a spreadsheet and do it yourself.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Here's actually... And what's interesting is I didn't know a few of my friends have been playing it since launch.
Yeah.
So it's super cool to actually jump in with people willing to help you out, telling you what to do, how to go.
Yeah, and
it.
It's free on every platform, right, for entry.
Yes.
But what about like the in-app purchase scene in this one? Do you have to pay to play?
No,
or
no
people call it the most fair free-to-play game ever.
Yeah, so like you, there are multiple currencies, but you and you can use them to unlock. So in this game, you have the class system is known as frames. You collect, so with the latest update, there are now 37 frames or 37 classes as they're known. And they all do different things. They all have, like, you have the Excalibur, you have Garuda, you have 3-4, you have a bunch of others. And they do different things, like, you know, bleeding damage, different style of jumps, etc., etc. So what's interesting here is with the latest update is that it allows you now to explore another open world area. So the game has two open world areas. One is the Plains of Eidolon, which is an Earth area, because the game takes place all across the galaxy. You're a space ninja who takes on heists, does espionage.
Are you guarding anything?
Huh?
Are you guarding anything?
Yeah.
So are you the guardian of the galaxy?
More like the guardian ninja of the galaxy, but yeah, kind of like that. So Fortuna basically takes place on Venus, and there's a colossal underground city, and there's a huge overworld. There's a lot of cool things to do. And while there is a lot of lore attached to it, very dense, depending how you want to go, how deep you want to go. But then to me, what I really like is a moment-to-moment combat. Sliding,
and the traversal is so good.
Yeah, so like sliding across the map is like Vanquish, which is one of the greatest games of all time. Well played. And like the shooting is just right. So like from a pure mechanical standpoint, it's just so much fun to come back in and play. And honestly, this is everything which I feel Destiny should have been. Destiny 1, Destiny 2 should have been. And this is it. So I've been playing quite a bit of that on the PS4 and the Switch, moving between the two. Sadly, there's no account migration or crossplay. So from console at least. So yeah, that's disappointing. But otherwise, it's pretty good. So I've been playing a lot of that. And I have been playing, as Mike foreshadowed, Big Bash Boom. And it's a cricket game, so I thought I'll check it out. And I've never said this about a cricket game, but damn, I want my money back. It is so bad.
It's more like Big Bash Bust.
Yeah, I mean, you should just check
out his review. I still can't believe the screenshot I saw in the review when, like, I saw the tweet saying, whatever, like, review on Switch. And I'm like, you know, let me check it out. How the reviews. I saw a screenshot and I was like, this literally looks like 3DS effects in whatever. And that's kind of like not doing justice to some 3DS game. But it really looks bad. I don't know how it looks on other platforms, but at least the screenshot as of on the Switch version, not
good. So that's the thing. I mean, you can check out how bad it is with Pranay's review. So yeah, I've been playing basically those three games.
Okay then, I think that's all we have for this episode of Transition. And we'll see you with another episode next week. And in the meantime, I'd ask everyone who uses these apps to listen to podcasts, please rate our show, please like our show, please subscribe to our show, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, on iPhone, or Google Podcasts, on your Android phones. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Olai Paulson, whose album PPP, PPP is where the tracks are from. If you like the show, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram at Gadgets360. Thank you so much for listening.